Right. I mean, like, you, this punk rock, right? It's all about authenticity. And right now I'm authentically eating an orange. And this is Authentically Punk News Podcast, episode 327. Okay, hey, this is the Punk News Podcast. I'm Adam White, recording for you in my basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario. I'm eating the second of two clementines that I have sitting here on my recording desk. So if you hear that, well, you're listening to the show and you dislike it. I don't know. Go fuck yourself. So joining me on tonight's show...
The punkest of all the fruits, the clementine. Yeah.
It's all dainty and it's just delicate and delightful.
Got to peel all that. Tiny
I would say the most punkest of all fruits is probably the prickly pear because it's prickly and sour.
Mm. Yeah, this is really more of a twee fruit if you think about it. So, joining me on tonight's show, Mr. John Gentile out of Philadelphia, and Mr. Tom Trauma. I almost used your real name. Oh no. Oh, God, you have a whole identity going.
So much for my witness relocation program.
Okay, so Mr. Tom Trauma out of Grand Rapids, Michigan. I'm Adam White. I'm in Niagara Falls. This is the Punk News Podcast. It is the last Punk News Podcast that I am recording before I go on a much-needed vacation, and that's why, all rules are off, John. We're just eating oranges, throwing... you know, crumpled up Kleenexes on the floor.
I'm selling Russian bootleg DVDs to people on Amazon.
Mm-hmm. We're just it's on. This is just like lawlessness. So speaking of lawlessness, we get any mail this week? I mean, if anyone wants to write us email, you can do that by going to podcast@punknews.org. Well, you can't go to that, it's not a place, but you could open up your email program and type in podcast@punknews.org, specifically in the to box. And then you could send things to us. Well, words mostly. But anyone do that?
Yes, we do have an email from Double D, who's written in at least once or twice before. This is from Double D. Double D said, "Hello, Punk News Podcast. I was surprised to hear that on more than one occasion you categorized Brutal Youth as hardcore. I think Brutal Youth is pretty much sounds like MXPX. A vocalist does not make a band hardcore. The phrasing and lyrics of Brutal Youth and the endless harmonizing are 90s skate punk at best. With this logic, then Crimpshire is hardcore. Don't get me wrong, Brutal Youth are a decent band, but hardcore I think they are not. I think we can all agree that Bad Brains are the epicenter of hardcore. I really like Bones Brigade, Endless Bummer EP, and Corrosions of Conformity's 6-song EP with Mike singing and Anything by Gloss as the hardcore benchmarks. My measure for a band being hardcore is to see how many girls are at the show. Low girl turnout means you are a hardcore band.
If it's more than 1%, you're punk. If it's less
high, than 1%, high girl turnout, hardcore. You are a pop punk band like Green Day or MXPX. I'm curious as to what your tastes are in regard to hardcore and how to put bands in certain genres. Thanks for carrying the banner of punk rock. I really like your podcast from Double D. I didn't know where that was going when I was reading it, but he really turned that one around. I gotta say.
Yeah, that worked out in our favor. Defining hardcore is basically the one thing that I've never really been good at, and I've always felt like I'm on the wrong side of whatever the trend that people seem to be on. Which is to say, like, if I went to a show and it was billed as a hardcore show, it probably wouldn't be what I actually want to hear. So I'm with Double D here in that, I mean, my idealization of hardcore is very 80s. So, you know, if it's coming from that Bad Brains Minor Threat universe, then I'm more content with it. But to me, there's so many bands that I'll hear that sound like maybe like a little bit of a faster Black Flag. And to me, that's what I would like to hear as hardcore. At least like that's my preferred thing. I guess my hardcore has very little metal in it, is really what I'm getting around to. And that means that for me, there's a lot of bands that blur that line between being a punk band and a hardcore band. And it really comes down to, I don't know, some slight measure of speed and aggression or whatever. But hey, I don't know, John.
Yeah, I would break down hardcore into two areas. Honestly, I'm the only person that I think I've ever heard really define it this way, but I think it's accurate. I would say there's hardcore punk and hardcore. And I would say hardcore is actually a subgenre of hardcore punk. Hardcore punk is music like early Black Flag, Minor Threat, Gangrene, like, you know, Dead Kennedys, Plastic Surgery Disasters. That's all hardcore. I would say fast, aggressive sounding music with a lot of, well, not a lot, but a good amount of feedback in the guitar that's angry sounding. And then there's what I would say is hardcore, which is derivative of what we call NYHC, New York hardcore. That is bands that are derivative of Cro-Mags, Gorilla Biscuits, Antidote, and who's the other one that I'm missing? Oh, Sick of It All. An agnostic.
Why wouldn't that just be NYHC though?
That is New York.
But why does that get to be the canonical hardcore?
Good question. Because now there's bands like Terror. There's bands like a Turnstile. People say that's hardcore, but that's not hardcore punk. It's hardcore, and by hardcore they mean derivative of Sick of It All, of Cro-Mags, of Agnostic Front, and they just say hardcore. So to me, it goes Bad Brains influence Minor Threat. Bad Brains and Minor Threat influenced Cro-Mags and Agnostic Front. Agnostic Front and Sick of It All and Cro-Mags influenced, quote, hardcore, that is Terror, Turnstile, all these new hard, how's the name of that band? The band with the guys that are real jerks that everybody hates. No, that hardcore band. The guy with the long hair. Oh, I can't remember the name of the band. No.
Integrity?
Not everyone hates them. B, Integrity.
I don't
want to
name any of the bands that are in my head because
I'm just going to name any.
Although Integrity is hardcore, about. They're really more hardcore influence. They're almost a heavy metal band these days. Oh, I can't. Effed Up used to play with them. Trash Talk. That's like hardcore, hardcore, if you will. And to me, what defines that is the thick low end bass with almost the metallic. A texture on the outside, that's what I would call hardcore. And really, if you go by those two etymologies, if you will, almost every hardcore punk band breaks down into one of those two, and you can trace the influence either directly back to Cro-Mags and Agnostic Front, even though some of them deny it, or you can trace it back to Minor Threat, Bad Brains, Dead Kennedys, Black Flag. And I think like those are really the two main types of hardcore punk or hardcore there are. With regards to Brutal Youth, what's interesting is I think it's sort of a way to legitimize certain things or a way to for people to associate themselves with a certain collection of a certain background, if you will. Music that is not hardcore started to be called hardcore, and that's not a criticism of the music. I'm not criticizing Brutal Youth, but Brutal Youth does not sound like hardcore to me. The other big band is Angel Dust. People are like, oh, I love this hardcore band, Angel Dust. Angel Dust sounds like a pop punk band to me. And where this comes from is a group of professors has not agreed with this, but if you look at melodic hardcore bands like Kid Dynamite, that's where these bands come from, and that's why now people are saying bands like Angel Dust, bands like Brutal Youth are hardcore, when really they're almost more pop punk, if you will, just with a certain vocal style that was used by the melodic hardcore punk bands. And because the melodic hardcore punk bands use that vocal style, we're now saying non-hardcore music is hardcore in order to gain, I guess, the benefits of being, quote, hardcore, if you will.
I feel like the melodic hardcore thing was such a bad, like, quicksand pit of a genre that not that the music was bad, but that it was such like a weird slope into which I feel like every band in the mid to late 90s that, you know, didn't want to, that was ostensibly a punk band but was trying to distance themselves from, I don't know, being lumped in with the Casualties, would claim to be a melodic hardcore band, to the point where like that just became the genre that everyone was talking about, and the definition started to make no sense. There are people that were calling like Bad Religion a melodic hardcore band a lot of the times, and what does that even mean at that point? So
I mean, if you ask me, melodic hardcore is an oxymoron. Hardcore beat a hardcore punk or hardcore. I mean, like nasty.
Like would you call Good Riddance that? I mean, they're not. That's I've heard bands of that nature, but they're more. I call them almost a skate punk band, but.
I mean, like, where would you put, like, Dag Nasty?
Dag Nasty is close to being what I would call an American hardcore band, which means, you know, they existed in that first half of the 80s, so they would probably fall into the American hardcore category. But here's the thing, guys. You're making this way, way too complicated. If it sounds like Negative Approach, it's hardcore. If it doesn't, it's not. If you have any questions, ask me about the specific band, and I'll tell you whether or not they're hardcore.
What's Black Flag?
And I will settle all disputes. Black Flag is a hardcore punk band, no question.
What's Crass?
Crass is an anarcho punk band. They're not hardcore. That's it. It doesn't have the musical intensity. I shouldn't say that because it's intense musically, but it doesn't have that little bit of a metallic influence or that super fast influence. Crass is its own animal.
What's Discharge?
Discharge is a hardcore band, at least in the earliest.
Interesting.
Point.
Most people would
in the nineties they were in the 90s they were sort of a bland metal band, but in their
kind of Led Zeppelin.
Yeah.
Last question, Tom. Yes. What is Cro-Mags then?
Cro-Mags are definitely a hardcore band, but I can't even believe you'd ask.
But they're from before Negative Approach.
It doesn't matter that.
Okay.
Negative Approach codified it in 1984.
It's like Don Quixote. There's only three books from before Don Quixote. Quixote after. But last question in regard to that, then, Tom. Yes. You would put Cro-Mags and Minor Threat in the same category of bands, then?
The thing is, John, I'm afraid your long-winded explanation over-intellectualizes it a little bit. I would definitely call them both hardcore bands, but the Cro-Mags definitely have that more metallic New York thing going on. The New York hardcore stuff is more metal than the American hardcore stuff and what I would call the straight hardcore punk stuff. Damn it, now I sound like you, John. I'm all freaking blathering. I'm blathering about it. Damn you all. Anyway, like I said, if you want to know, just ask Tom Trauma at punknews.
You don't have that email address.
Yes, I don't have that email address. Ask John. Send it to John and ask him, and he'll ask me. He'll ask me, and I'll tell you whether or not the band you like is hardcore. Brutal Youth, no, they don't make the muster. They're not bad, but they're not.
Let's make it. I want some listener to write in a bunch of random bands, and we'll ask Tom if they're hardcore, and he'll say yes or no, and we'll see his answers.
I bet you nobody. I bet you. I'd like to see the band that would stump me. I mean, there must be a band that's, you know, like you were talking about Dag Nasty. That's kind of a tricky one because they were a little more melodic. But I would definitely call them, like I said, like an American hardcore band.
I'm trying to think like stuff like Poison Idea.
Oh, no question.
No question. Okay.
How about Butthole Surfers?
I probably wouldn't call the Butthole Surfers a hardcore punk band, even though at the beginning of their career you could maybe say that. Would be tricky is like somebody like a Dead Milkman. What do you do with the Dead Milkman? They're not a hardcore punk band. Just a punk band. But like early Misfits, you know, that's kind of a.
How about Earth AD?
Yeah, that was definitely a metallic influence. I think that was definitely a hardcore album. I don't know. I'm going to get lambasted. I could just feel it. I waded into some tricky waters here and. Whatever.
Well, there you go. Write us in. Stump Tom.
I was going to say, I almost gave a false email Tom, address. Just put, yeah. Podcast at punknews.org.
We should get you like a postal address, like so people can actually send you.
Dude, I'm old school. Yeah, I was going to say Anthrax. A P.O. box, an actual P.O. box.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, people. That's what people want to do.
Like send vials of blood, drugs, beer would be good. But.
At least though they'd be labeled differently. Like you don't want to just like get the liquid and go like, is this vial of blood, drugs, or beer? And the only way I can really know is to taste
it. Exactly. Well, you know, nobody said life would be easy, Adam.
Speaking of not easy, John, you got in a record store day?
Oh, yeah.
A line? Well,
you want to hear my entire record store day adventures?
I do because I sat out.
Yeah, man. Well, I had a pretty good record store day this year, as we talked about on previous Punk News podcast episodes. Adam White and Ricky were not too hot on record store day this year. I was very excited because I wanted to get the new Guar 7-inch, the new Alice Cooper 7-inch, and the Rolling Stones 10-inch. So I went to Electric Avenue Records in Westchester. I got there at 5:30. No, I got there at 6:30. They opened at 9. I was number 2 in line, and I honestly believe it, only like 12 people showed up. So it definitely seemed that like Record Store Day is like losing its steam, if you will. So anyway, I got in line.
Black Friday Record Store Day. I don't think it's the one in the spring so much, but I think the Black Friday one is a little bit.
So I waited in line, and I was number 2, and I got in, and luckily enough, I got the Alice Cooper live 7-inch, which is the original Alice Cooper band getting together in 2016 and recording 2 songs, and it sounds fantastic, and they sound so fantastic. I hope they record a whole album, or at least a live album of that garage show. The new Alice Cooper 7-inch is great. I also got the Guar 7-inch, which on one side has Otis Arungus, who has now passed away, covering Baba O'Reilly, but also Get Out of My Dreams and Into My Car. And it's so great because it really does show how Guar, especially Otis Arungus, could take any song and make it their own. About halfway through Get Out of My Dreams and Into My Car by Billy Ocean, Otis goes, "Just get in the car!" And it's hilarious because he turns the song into like a kidnapping. Flipside has new Guar vocalist Blothar covering West End Girls, and then also that song This Is For the People Who Died, and it's a fairly fitting tribute. The 7-inch itself was $20, which is a little expensive for a picture 7-inch, but I wanted I wanted it pretty bad, and it's pretty cool. The last thing that I wanted to get, they had at the Rolling Stones 10-inch record. It was basically, the Rolling Stones have a new album coming out this Friday, and Record Store Black Friday was, last Friday? So it was a week early, and it was just simply one of the songs off the new record, same version and everything. I picked it up. I really, really wanted to get it. Adam White, Tom Trauma, what do you think this 10-inch one-song record costs, a one-sided single?
$30.
What do you think, Adam?
One-sided 10-inch from a band like the Rolling Stones that doesn't need your money.
And the song is are going to be on the new album out in 3 days from now.
The Rolling Stones are putting on a new album?
Yeah.
Wow. What did Tom do? Tom did 30?
Yeah.
31.
It's going to be 40.
You guys are close. $28. I really wanted to get it.
We both went over, Adam. No winners.
I wanted to get, but I just could not justify $28 on one song. You know what I mean? I really wanted to get it, but $28.
Wonder why the kids are buying their $1 MP3 files, huh?
Well, true that. I'm willing to pay a bit of a premium on Record Store Day because it's Record Store Day and yada yada. But $28 for a 10-inch one single, that's outrageous, right? I mean,
dude, it's outrageous for an LP.
I know. I hear you, man. So I had to put it back. It pained me, but I had to put it back. For the past 2 months, I've been looking forward to getting that 10-inch, gone home, putting it on, and hearing the first new Rolling Stones song in 10 years or something. But I had to put it back.
It'd only be like $7 a minute. I fear for the future of record collecting, because just even in general, the prices have gotten so high. How do you build a collection like that? I mean, most of us when we were younger were buying, like grabbing stuff out of the dollar bin and buying cheap CDs and crap like that. And you know, I have thousands and thousands of things in my collection, probably 3,000 or 4,000. But if you're paying $28 or $35 for a 180-gram record, you're never going to amass any kind of a collection, right?
But that's true. And to the newer collectors, I say spend wisely. You know, don't just, you know, I mean, don't, you're better off getting 3 awesome records for $10 than 1 awesome record for $30. You know what I mean? Big ups to Electric Avenue for being a small record store, but having a pretty cool, I mean, the prices aren't their fault. That's the prices. You know what I mean? So big ups to them. Then I went down to one of my favorite record stores, Jupiter Records, down in Wilmington. Jupiter Records does not do the Black Store Friday thing. They just buy a bunch of private collections and then put them all out on Record Store Day and Record Store Day Black Friday. What I got down there, boys, and I don't know what I'm going to do with it. I got an original censored pressing on Frank Zappa's label, unopened copy. Original sealed copy of Alice Cooper's first album. Unsealed. It's 50 years old. I don't know what I'm going to do with it.
Okay,
I
mean, so the first Alice Cooper record was... remind me what the first one is.
The first album?
Yeah, what's the first one called?
Oh, it's not called... Pretty's For You?
That's
the,
okay.
The second one's Easy Action.
Okay. Nice. What'd you pay for that?
I paid a fair amount for it. Not an insane amount, especially compared to the price of the Rolling Stones one song, 7-inch. But I mean, what do I do with it? I mean, I could flip it for a lot of money, but I don't think I want to do that. But I'm not going to play it. Do I frame it?
To open it. Yeah.
I'm not going to open it because I already have an unopened copy that I play, you know? But I mean, I couldn't, like, it's probably the only one in existence. You know what I mean?
Is it worth more than what you paid for it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's worth it. I mean, hypothetically, Tom, it's worth a lot of money because it's
if I had a copy that was already open, that was already playing, I'd probably flip it. But
yeah,
you know what I would do? I would Discogs list it for an absurd amount of money, and then just to fish, just to see what happens. If someone offers you an absurd amount of money, then you know what? Maybe your morals all fall apart. You'll just sell that sucker.
Russian drug czar or something is willing to pay thousands for this thing.
Listen,
if one of like Putin's oligarchs wants to pay you for that, then take the rubles.
I'll send you the rubles stained with the blood of the working man.
Listen to this, guys. So not anymore, but when they used to manufacture records would actually have like extra pieces on the outside that they would take a lathe and cut off the extra pieces on the outside. Okay. You guys remember when you used to get like army men, sometimes they would have like extra bits on them.
Yeah.
So the records used to have those. They don't have those anymore. Out of the dollar bin, 15 years ago, I got Jimi Hendrix's first album. I pull it out. It's got that on it. And it's never been played because it's too big to be played on a record player because it's got the extra bits. You can't play it, right? So about 8 years ago, I put it up on eBay for like $20. No one bought it. I'm thinking, and tell me if I mean, what could
okay.
Happen?
So you have audio experience. Did you look it up to see if it was first press?
I have not done that yet, but it's early press. You're right. I should do that. What if I put? I mean, it's never played Jimi Hendrix record with a quote rare pressing error, right? What if I just put it up on Discogs? I was thinking, what if I put it on Discogs for $500? What if I put it on Discogs for $1,000? What if I put it on Discogs for $10,000? You know what I mean? What if I put it up on Discogs for $10,000? Like what would happen? You know,
I have been looking at some leather Barco loungers for the Punk News hovercraft, so it could be good.
You didn't have any qualms about trying to sell one of our mixtapes for like $999.
That wasn't
whatever you listed it for. So I think you should list it for an absurd amount of money. If someone chooses to pay you that, then that's their problem.
My only fear is, like, you know how the internet is? Would I get lynched by the internet somehow if it got out?
They'll find out it's you.
Did I put, like, a record online for, like, $15,000, you know?
No, because you know what? They're all going to, they're going to jeer you until someone gives you $15,000.
You don't want to be the Martin Shkreli of,
Well, but
then you could buy your own fucking internet. That's what you could do.
I mean, I'm not opposed to making money off records at all. I don't think it's immoral to sell a Jimi Hendrix record for, I don't know, $15,000. I just don't want to get lynched by the internet because you know how people are assholes on the internet, you know? But
since when are you ever concerned about what people on the internet think?
Well, that's true. That's true. Honestly, boys, let's give it a shot then. Let's see what happens. I got to figure out what's the right absurd figure. Like what?
$10,000 is real money.
Like, what if I put $100,000? You know, it's a one of a kind Jimi Hendrix record.
Maybe.
I mean, maybe. You can't list it for like if you list it for like, I don't know, like some fictional, you know, begillion, then that doesn't really count. Like, it has to be something that a human could conceivably pay, but they wouldn't. Unless they were a Russian oligarch.
The most expensive record ever sold, of course, is the Velvet Underground acetate, which went for $70,000. Yeah, actually, that's not true anymore. Martin Shkreli beat that, but I mean that doesn't count. You know what I mean?
I thought you said the most expensive record I've ever sold, and I'm like, whoa.
No. So, anyways, not to drag this out, but let me tell you guys about. So, anyway, I'm super thrilled about this Alice Cooper record. I don't know what I'm going to do with it. I'm going to hold on to it for a little while at least, but I don't know what to. It's a sealed, unopened record, but. Do I frame it? I don't know what I want to do with it. Anyways, so the next day I go to a record convention. It's called the Greater Philadelphia Annual Record Convention. And notoriously, it's a shitty record convention. And indeed, it is a shitty record convention. It's basically guys that it's definitely a dad record show. And so it's guys that like everything is way overpriced and they don't realize that CDs aren't worth anything anymore. So all the CDs are overpriced. All the records are overpriced. And you know, it used to be at record conventions, people would get a premium because it's the only place we could get rare stuff. But now that you can get rare stuff anywhere, record conventions are where you go to either A, save money by paying, you know, less than market value for a record, or where you go to get like something extremely rare. But, you know, medium rare stuff, you can just get it online anymore. So it's pointless to spend extra money at a record convention. You know what I'm saying?
Or just to rub elbows with other pretentious assholes.
And the other thing is, it was almost 50% bootlegs, you know, and anymore, there's no point in buying CD bootlegs anymore because you can get any bootleg there is online. You know what I mean? Yep. So, but listen to this. So I kind of had a bad day at the record store. The first thing is there are these Rolling Stones bootlegs. In the early 2000s, this Russian guy did amazing Rolling Stones bootlegs, and he only made 500 of them each. But I actually think he made more than 500, but they claim he made 500 of them. And what happens is if you open them up, it has every single cover issued for that record in the different countries, and it's got amazing bonus tracks, and it was one of the only places where you could get the mono versions of the records, which were different than the stereo versions of the records, on CD. Beautiful, beautiful job. And these CDs are very desirable, very collectible, because it's this Russian guy that just did an amazing job remastering the Rolling Stones catalog. So I saw three of them there, and I snatched them up. I take them home. I'm like, you know, these look a little different than my other ones. Would you believe that a guy sold me a bootleg of a bootleg?
And is there shitty. No honor amongst thieves?
Exactly. Like I got a bootleg of a bootleg, and they're shitty. And I'm thinking, man, I'm beating this guy out of a bunch of money. I'm only spending $6 each for these. This guy doesn't know what they are. I get him home, and he was laughing. It's like the Greater Philadelphia Expo Record Expo sucks because it's the kind of. I've been going to punk rock record conventions lately, and I find that in punk rock record conventions, people are pretty on the level. They might not want to sell something for cheap or whatever, but they're not going to try to lie to you about what it is. This record convention was definitely a record convention of guys trying to pass off bootlegs as genuine. Like, they had bootleg Misfits records they were selling for the genuine price. It was real, you know, bullshit. You know what I mean? Just like trying to pass off records for not what they are. However, I'm going to wrap up my story real quick. So, at the record convention, Tom Trauma, Adam White, you can bargain. True?
If you buy multiples and things like that, yeah.
So there's this old guy selling a bunch of CDs. We're talking garbage CDs, you know, like just CDs that nobody wants, right?
Smash Mouth.
Yeah, not even Smash Mouth, but like Celine Dion, you know what I mean? I see one that I want, and it says CDs, $3. So I pick one up. It's, you know, it's kind of beat up. I say, will you take $2 for this CD? And he says to me, you're trying to beat me out of a dollar. And I think he's joking, you know what I mean? So I said, yes, I am. He was not joking. He got so pissed off when I said that. He starts to grumble, and then he's like, just forget it. And I'm like, oh, I was joking. And he goes, no, you weren't. I was like, yes, I was. He's like, were you really? I was like, yes, I was. And then his wife, I was flustered because I was not expecting that reaction from bargaining for a $3 CD. His wife says to me, well, what would you pay for that in the store? And I should have paused. I was not a good attorney in this situation. I said, well, it's a dollar CD, a dollar. I was just saying it was off the top of my head, which is always a dumb thing. And it is a dollar CD, you know, and they were older and they didn't realize that CDs aren't worth anything anymore. So in their mind, $3 for CDs is like nothing. And to me, it's like, this is $2 too much, you know? And so then I left them $3 because I wanted the CD, but they didn't like take it. I like left it on the table and said, have a nice day. And I walked away, but I felt so bad. I like ruined this old guy's day, but I don't know if I was the asshole in the situation or not.
Something was going to ruin his day. It might as well have been you, John.
I felt bad about it, but on the other hand, like he was flabbergasted that I would bargain at the record convention.
I don't know. Whatever. It's fine. Either way, you're within your right, and he's within his right to say screw you, whippersnapper.
Yeah, I just wish I realized he wasn't joking. He's like, you're trying to beat me out of a dollar, and I'm thinking, yeah, like he's actually suggesting that I'm trying to beat him out of a dollar. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I said, yes, I am. Like real gleefully.
Well, John, that's what you see. That's called karma. That's what happens when you think you're like getting a really good deal on these Rolling Stones imports, and you think you're taking someone, and then you get home, and as you're leaving, you can hear the guy going, and then
Tom, you are right, and let me tell you, the Greater Philadelphia Area Record Convention, it is a cutthroat place. Stay out.
Well, I used to go to a lot of record shows. I've kind of gotten out of it lately, but are you done with Black Friday, John? Are you still going?
Oh no, I'm done. I blathered on a lot there, so I apologize. That was my record.
You said you did not go out, Adam.
No, there was nothing on the particular list that.
No, I didn't even look at the list.
That struck me. You know what? I have no problem with Record Store Day as a thing that exists. Like, there's far worse shit that humanity has achieved in the past few years than that. So I'm cool with it. I'm good. And I'm game for getting in a line with a bunch of nerds and going into a place to spend money that I don't need to spend. I'm all for it. I was just uninspired. There was nothing I wanted.
Well, I went out with my boys, who are now 17 and 12. And we went comic book shopping and record shopping. So I got a couple of cool things. The most exciting thing I probably got, and it's sort of nerdy, but I got the Archie Meets the Ramones comic.
Mm.
And it's not that great of a read, but I like looking at it, and I like having it sitting there, and I enjoyed finding it, and I got a cool cover variant. And I did pick up a few things, but our great local record store here in downtown GR is called Vertigo Music, and the owner's a super good dude, but he does not appreciate the whole like Black Friday capitalism thing, so he doesn't participate in this record store day. He participates in the one in the spring, and they have huge crowds for it. But I did go in there and pick up a few things. I picked up a seven inch by a local punk band called Antilogical that I've been wanting to get, and I picked up physical copies of a couple of things that I'd reviewed from files earlier in the year. So it was a success. I didn't get in any shoving matches. I didn't offend any old people or try to screw anyone out of a dollar. I paid retail with gleefully paid retail. But I wasn't looking at like the $30 records. We were talking about earlier, I don't know how you build a record collection spending that kind of crazy money. I mean, and the fact of the matter is, I think Adam and I kind of talked about this before. I swear I still buy a lot. I still buy 50 things a year, probably on average, 40 to 50 things a year. But I probably buy half of them at shows now. I buy a ton of stuff at shows. You know, you could pick up a band CD at the show for $10 or a record for $15. So I do that as much.
Yeah,
as
I mean that feels like that's my main intake a lot of the time. And mainly because I can justify it more. If I could, of course, walk into a store and just spend money, but that means I'm just, you know,
yeah,
it's money that I'm probably should be using for my kids. But
and you can go to a show and say, I have $60. I can buy as many beers and records and t-shirts or whatever as I can get at this
right,
show.
Right. And also, if I'm at the show, I'm like, I feel much better about making this purchase because the band can use this money to go buy drugs.
Exactly.
So that's what I want. All right. We're going to play a song, and then we're going to move on and talk about some of the other stuff that's going on this week. We are almost at the end of the year, which means it is end of year list season, which means that those of us that make said lists rush around at the last minute and try to listen to all the things that we didn't actually listen to during the year and then panic rewrite our lists with all the stuff that we should have been paying attention to. So my go-to label today for doing that was Deranged Records, who always does cool stuff, and I always learn about it after I should have. This is a record from a band called Worse. That is from New York City, a trio that has a bunch of people that were in a bunch of other bands, and it's, I'm not going to go through their whole family tree, but I believe the three of them have all played most recently in Shocks, I believe is the name of the band. I don't have it in front of me.
Was it the S-H-O-K-S band?
I will tell
if
you.
If they were a hardcore band, it would be S-H-O-X. Shocks.
Shocks.
Where is it? Worse. Shocks. S-H-O-X-X. So, anyways.
I'm going to say hardcore, if you ask.
They are listed on the Deranged site as the Unforgiving Shocks. So, let's say hardcore. Anyways, Worse is cool. They've got a bit of a... I think they sound a lot on this record like some of the most recent Pissed Jeans stuff. They're referencing like Butthole Surfers and Flipper and stuff like that in the actual write up that's on Deranged, but it's cool. All the songs on this sound different. They're all snotty and scummy and chunky and great. So, anyways, this is a song from the record. The record is called Rubber Burner. The song I'm gonna play is called Fun Size, and you should go over to Bandcamp and check it out. So this is Worse with Fun Size. Deep in the bottom, you encounter a top. Mistaken for Okay, we're back. Lots of stuff went on this week. The one of them, I don't know how much time I want to give it, because fuck this guy. John.
Adam.
Our buddy.
Yeah.
Mr. Underwear.
Oh, I'm having an inspiration. But go on, Adam, but I'm having an inspiration.
Mr. Underwear.
our buddy, Mr. Underwear, the son of Sex Pistols manager Malcolm McLaren and fashion designer Vivian Westwood, he went and finally pulled off the stunt that he has been talking up all year long, in which he got a big pile of rare and expensive and, you know, one-of-a-kind punk things that had come into his possession. This includes Sex Pistols acetates, the Sid Vicious doll that was used on the front of the Some Product interview album, clothes worn by the band during their original run, and lots of other stuff. And he set it all on fire. So there you go. I mean, as part of this, days earlier, this guy, Joe Corey is his name, he put an acetate of Anarchy in the UK on eBay with a reserve of £1 million, stating that if that item sold, he would donate the money to charity. The bidding stalled at about £62,000. So then he decided not to sell it at all. And, you know, set it on fire. So this guy's done his thing. The news has all picked it up. Really, the most regrettable part about it all to me is that, of course, it made big news. So, you know.
But did it? Go ahead.
All right. Well, I guess that's a good question. So this has all happened. So I guess, you know, we're at the end of it. We've been criticizing this thing all year long because it seems. Like while I can maybe sympathize with the, you know, with the kill your idols sentiment of the whole thing, there's something about, you know, relentlessly self-promoting that you're going to wreck a large amount of stuff that not even could be in a museum, but you could fucking sell and do something with the money that's good. Just seems like a waste, and I don't think this guy's point is served by him doing this. I think his ego is served by him doing this. I think his own self-promotion is served by him doing this. But whatever he's trying to say about punk rock and the place it should have in history or the place it should exist in culturally in the UK, I don't feel is actually all that served. And you know what? £62,000 would have gone to, you know, eat a lot of hungry mouths. So that was a dick thing to do. John, what do you think? You don't think it made enough news?
Well, actually, I don't. But I mean, first of all, this guy is despicable. $6 million could have saved many, many people's lives. Like, literally, this could have saved people's lives. And there's one thing, and I saw someone says, well, you know, if someone buys an expensive car, is that wasteful too? Well, maybe it is, but at least they're doing something with that money. At least they're using it for something. This is just some guy wasting money because he has the financial ability to waste that much money, and it won't directly affect him. His life will probably change none at all, when really he could have done a lot of good with this money. So I think he's despicable. But Adam said, well, he made it in the big news, so he got what he wanted. My question is, did he get what he wanted? Yeah, did he get what he wanted? The point is, of all this, for him to make some sort of lasting statement and for him to get some sort of notoriety or fame about himself. But it's not 1976 anymore. News moves incredibly quickly. So to stay in the news, you have to do something spectacular that really stays with people, or just something that catches on like a meme, such as Kanye West stealing Taylor Swift's microphone. You know, I mean, I'm not saying that's a great artistic statement, but that's something that stuck around. Because news moves so quickly, people are going to forget about this in a week. You know, in 2 weeks. Like, this is not going to be something in the history book that, can you believe that in 2016, Joe Corey burnt this? People are going to forget about this next year. So the first question is, did he make some sort of lasting statement that resonated with people? No. Second, did he get some sort of fame or notoriety onto himself? The answer is no. There's really no one saying, I mean, there's a few people, but they're even going to stop saying it in a little while. A few people are saying, oh, this is cool. But most people are saying, how wasteful, how selfish, how stupid. So he's going to go down in history as a footnote, and a schmuck footnote as this. So I think this is just something that backfired on him, and I'm glad it backfired on him. I think he's miserable. I think he's horrible. And It's just a shame that these irreplaceable items that are wasted when they could have been sold to someone that would have really enjoyed them, and that money could have really been used to help people out. So he's just a schmuck. He's greedy. And I'm glad to see that. I don't think he's going to get what he wanted out of this.
I mean, I guess it would be a lot less. Maybe it would be more shocking that that like a rich provocateur was being provocative. If a rich provocateur wasn't just fucking elected your president, like did Trump not like tweet six things the day that this guy burnt stuff on fire that got a million times more attention? Like it's sort of hard to be, I don't know, like the big loudmouth in the room when like the biggest loudmouth in
the world
is sucking up all the air.
Yeah, so. It's just a shame. Go ahead.
You know, I'm on the podcast about once a month. I don't do it all the time, and I swear every freaking time I'm on, this has been a story, and I'm glad this shit's burned. I'm glad it's over with, and let's stop giving this guy his due.
I'll second that.
You know whatever. Like I said, I think it's punk rock. Burn the shit. It's fine.
You think this is cool?
Absolutely. I support him 100%. But I'm sick of him. I mean, I don't think he's a great guy or anything, but hey, whatever. Listen, unlike you young socialists, it's his shit. He can do whatever he wants with it. We don't have to redistribute it to the poor as far as I'm concerned. It's his money. Do whatever you want. I mean, is it make him a good person? Hell no. But, you know, whatever. It's done. It's burned. He should have had, like, Johnny Rotten come and do the ceremonial lighting.
No, Johnny Rotten hates him.
But, you know, we should have... But anyway, John, my inspiration now, as soon as this story came up, boy, this would have been a great seg. I think we need to burn those rare records that you can't decide what to do with.
Yeah, that ain't happening.
Give me your Jimi Hendrix and your Frank Zappa and your Alice Cooper.
Unlike Joe Corey, I am not willing to put money. I am not willing to put notoriety above money. I want money, then notoriety. You know
exactly. And the.
You know what? I think I would be far more okay with this if he didn't seem like such a smarmy asshole.
That's what it comes down to, isn't it?
That's really like,
because if it would have been like, Johnny Rotten,
money for the poor,
burning this stuff, and be like, oh, cool.
I feel that like 90% of my discontent with this is that like I see this guy's picture and I just want to punch him. Like something about it.
As you get older, that's true of almost everyone you see a picture of Adam. So you're just turning.
So speaking of, I mean, like, so stuff that makes you want to punch stuff. Does this fall into the category, Tom Trauma? Green Day. They are releasing a new box set. The box set will include all of the band's studio albums and greatest hits releases, all the shit, including their new full length, which is called Revolution Radio, as cassettes. And it is going to come with a custom Green Day designed boombox to play said cassettes on.
For a whopping. You see the price?
I don't know.
$250 bucks, wasn't it?
250 smacks plus shipping.
Oh, give me a freaking break. If you want to buy this, that's cool. Like I said, we've already discerned the fact that I'm a capitalist. Do what you want, but this is stupid. That's it. It's just stupid. I mean, talk about dollar bin CDs. You can build the whole damn Green Day collection for about 20 bucks. They sold so many CDs in the 90s. They're all over the dollar bin. It's like, you know, like I don't have a problem with it. Do whatever you want, but I'm not buying into the cassette thing. I believe I've gone on the public record as saying that I don't buy into the cassette thing.
There's a part of me that thinks like, well, at least then if you bought this, you would then have a working
cassette player, so you could listen.
I think a lot of people listen
to all the rest of your hipster cassettes. Exactly.
You know what? I showed up at my parents' house last year at some point, specifically a point when John Gentile made a Punk News mixtape. And I go into their basement and I'm rooting around and they're like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I need part of your stereo. And they're like, what do you mean?
What do you mean a part? It's one giant rack system.
Yeah. And that is, well, I just took the part of the rack that had the cassette player on it. I'm like, I need this.
And it wasn't like, the old school, just like the glass door and it was all just one piece.
No. A little bit newer than that. Excellent. This is one that my parents had years ago that was when everyone was buying a... I feel like everyone went through that phase where they were buying like big fucking like Yamaha 5-point surround sound systems, right? But then my parents had like that, but then they had the like the the six CD changer block that sat on top of that. And then they had the tape deck block that was on top of that. So I showed up and I stole the tape deck block. And they're like, why do you possibly need this? Like, is it for an art project? Are you going to throw it throw it in the ravine? Like, what's it for? And I brought it home and I put it on a shelf in my little record room here. And it's not plugged into anything because... it's a tape deck. But why the fuck do I want this? But I do have it. So maybe for this group, maybe this Green Day thing is really for people who need a way to play all their tapes.
I just not for me,
John. This I can't tell. I could not predict where you fall on this because
he's been dying to get all the Green Day albums on cassette. I can guarantee you that.
Well, I mean, I this to me, like, I have so many conflicting signals because. John is a fan of the weird and the whimsical. He's a fan of, unnecessary merch for wacky purposes. On the other hand, I cannot see you being a fan of a big elaborate Green Day product.
Well, as an art piece, I think this is kind of interesting. I particularly like how the box the cassette tapes come in is people don't have these anymore. In the 70s, these brown leather boxes is what you would keep your cassette tapes in. So I think that's interesting that Green Day has that as part of the thing. That being said, the point of cassettes is the following. They're cheap, so people can buy them without having to consider a whole lot. Once a cassette tape becomes something that you have to contemplate buying, it's dumb and you should get a CD or a record. So purely as an art piece, I think it's interesting. I think it looks cool, but I would not spend my money on this. And making cassettes a expensive thing is completely against the point of cassettes. They're quick and cheap. That's the point of a cassette. Also, this boombox is probably a really crappy sounding boombox. If you're going to get a tape player, you should probably just buy a $100 tape deck, which sounds great. Connected to your stereo and it'll sound good. So I think, I love the whimsical. And honestly, I don't think Green Day is going to make a whole lot of money off this, even though there's $250. How many people are really going to buy this? I think Green Day just putting this out because it's an interesting, fun thing. I salute them on that. I think making cassettes, I think anything expensive for cassettes is foolish and counterintuitive and pointless, and not pointless in a good way. That being said, I feel bad about banging on Green Day. We've been banging on Green Day all year, and part of it is they ask for it just so they put out bad music these days. But
it's fun to bang on the rich and famous.
True, but on the other hand, I mean, they're still punk, and they do bring punk bands out on tour with them. A lot of quote punk bands don't bring out punk bands with them anymore. They still do the Gilman thing once in a while, and they still do interesting side. Well, I don't think they're interesting, but I think they think they're interesting side projects. And so I don't know, man. Maybe we should give Green Day a little bit more slack than we do. There are a few things more pathetic than the uber punk saying Green Day's not punk. You know what I mean? So,
well, I don't know. When they did the MDC thing recently, the chant thing, my stomach was pretty disgusted by it. I mean, this is a band that's been so entrenched with corporate America for so long. They just should shut up. They have no moral high ground.
No, I appreciate them saying it, but I wish they would have given credit to Dave Dichter. They were not very, in the age where Twitter, you can tell all your fans everything at once. They could have just said, oh yeah, check out MDC. That's where we got that from on Twitter. Would have taken 30 seconds. They didn't, so I'm
getting kind of burned out. I know this is just slightly off topic, but the fact of the matter is DOA has redid one of their classic songs, Fucked Up Ronnie, Fucked Up Baby, as Fucked Up Trump, and
Fucked Up Donald.
Fucked Up Donnie, something like that.
Fucked Up Donnie,
MDC redid a song, and I got to tell you, I'm not a big fan of these classic punk bands renewing these songs. Redoing these songs every time that for whatever right-wing guy is coming up next. It's just, it makes it feel so much like novelty. It takes all the power away from the song, in my opinion. But anyway, I'm sorry. We're off track. What's next? Segway, Adam, segway.
Oh, that's a super interesting point. You're segging away from
it. Well, no, I mean, if you want to discuss it,
you've done it. It's seg.
Seg back. Adam, seg is back. Seg is back.
The news this week isn't that interesting, quite frankly. I mean, when the Green Day cardboard boombox is, your leading story.
You know what?
I'm going to actually hook my Pizza Hut pizza DJ booth up to that. I'm going to have a complete system, complete cardboard system.
Let's revisit that point on a future episode, though, because I think we could make a whole fucking study of bands that have.
You could talk to the dug
their song
angry
back
old
up.
Punk guy who's angry about angry old punk guys. Yes, it could be great. Anyway,
it's like I don't know. I was gonna make a really dumb joke there. I was gonna be like, "Hey, we're the Buzzcocks. This song is called 'Ever Fallen in Love with Brexit,' but that was dumb, so I didn't do it.
That's a very dad joke now, isn't it?
It was. I didn't do it. So okay, we're gonna talk about one more story before we play another song. We've mentioned this in the past, but it is literally one of the only things that is keeping me
alive.
And that is that Toronto's Career Suicide, they've released the details of their new album. It's going to be called Machine Response. It's coming out in February on Deranged Records in North America and on Static Shock in the UK. There's going to be a 7-inch with the same name, apparently, that is coming out with different songs on it sometime around that time, too. You can find the full track listing, the wonderful cover art, and all of this over at Punk News. We have not yet heard anything. Well, we've heard...
We heard some singles before.
We heard Cut and Run, I think. Yeah. So, we need to know more. So... As I've said on past shows, Career Suicide's current lineup is super cool to me. You've got Dallas Good from the Sadies playing guitar in there. You've got Ian Romano from Attack and Black playing drums. You've got, of course, Jonah Falco and what's his name?
Martin something.
Yeah. So Jonah from Fucked Up and it's like. Isn't he the singer? It's like I can never remember his name, and he's the vocalist.
I know he's Martin.
Yeah. Anyways, so the current lineup of Fucked Up, I think, of Career Suicide is super interesting. Tom, before we started the show, you were unsure of how much you should know about Career Suicide.
Yeah, I do not know them.
And there is an amazing resource that is now out. Martin Farkas is his name. There's an amazing resource that's out now that
it's called the internet.
No. Well, it is on the internet that for me was like the most engrossing thing that I've listened to in such a long time.
Tell me more, Adam. Tell me
what
more.
Was like the, I don't know what the anniversary was, but was it the 4-year anniversary? I don't know. There was some anniversary episode of, Damian Abraham's Turned Out a Punk podcast that just came out. Where he sat down with his fucked up bandmate, Jonah Falco, and him and Jonah spend like 2 hours just talking about how Jonah basically got into punk rock, talking about all these proto fucked up bands that he was in Toronto, including Career Suicide. And they talk a little bit about the new LP, but there's one part near the end of the episode, and this is super nerdy, but it was so interesting to me, where Jonah just sits there and like walks through all of the like 14 different lineups that this band has had, and kind of who joined when and who left, and then this person came in, and all this, and just from a pure like music nerding standpoint. Was so cool. So if you really want to learn,
that might be a little advanced for me. Maybe I should try listening to a couple of songs first.
I mean, you should go listen to Attempted Suicide. But yeah,
Attempted Suicide. Huh? Okay, I'm writing this down.
Attempted Suicide. Go listen to that LP. It's fast and angry, and it fits one of your definitions of hardcore.
I'm
pretty sure.
It's fast and angry music.
So anyways, but yeah, so there's new Career Suicide stuff coming out. That's the only thing anyone should care about as far as 2017 goes. Because the rest is going to suck. So there you go. That's what I'm going to say. Do we have another song?
I've got a song, but Tom might have a song too.
I got a song. When you want to go, John, or you want me to go?
You can go ahead, Tom. I'll go last.
I'm going to play a new song. Just came out on Devil's Night about a month ago. A local favorite Grand Rapids band of mine called Murder Party. They just put out their second EP called A New Batch. Gremlins themed, and this is actually the last song on the album, and it's called Killing Time.
Sitting here, I'm killing on a Saturday night.
Okay, we're back. It was Murder Party with the song Killing Time from A New Batch, played by Mr. Tom Trauma on the Punk News Podcast in 2016 on Earth. We have a few short kind of stories and things that we want to touch on before we shuffle off here. So the first is really maybe this is just a discussion. And John, what the hell's going on with Rise Records? Why are they now the label that every band is signing to?
I want
to
know, is Fat pissed off because Rise keeps poaching all the fat bands?
So
yeah, they must be throwing money at them. Didn't they just sign like Five Finger Death Punch?
Maybe. I can't keep track of everyone.
I think Rise signed Five Finger Death, which, don't get me wrong, none of us like them or anything, but I think they're pretty big. They play arenas.
Yeah, Five Finger Death Punch is huge, and I have no idea why.
I mean, as opposed to like TSOL, who plays, you know, like basements.
Yeah, true.
So Rise, the stories we're talking about here is Rise has signed both the Flatliners, who were on Fat, of course, and the classic punk band TSOL. So the Flatliners, we announced earlier that they had signed to Dine Alone in Canada, and they have. They have one of those deals now where their releases in Canada will be through Dine Alone, and their releases in the States will be on Rise. And a lot of Canadian bands do that for reasons that are very interesting to me, but I'm not quite sure I know enough about to say. But
keeps the prices down in the specific countries, I think. But that's not an uncommon arrangement, you know. A lot of time, Fat used to do stuff in America and Stomp would do it in Canada. And, you know, there's a lot of, you know, I don't think it's an adversarial relationship. I think it's,
I don't know. I mean, like economics are one part of it. I think it has a large part of it, like in Canada, at least it has to do with
shipping.
Like, I want to think that like Canada is a pretty small country as far as population goes, and particularly as far as our art scene goes. So if you go sign to, if you're a Canadian band and you go sign to Dine Alone, you're all of a sudden in the company of a bunch of bands that you may like and a bunch of people that you may like. And I think there's a little bit more of like a scene aspect to it than say a US band signing to a US label that's big.
Yeah. I was going to say, that being said, Dine Alone is a tiny label that probably does not have strong distribution worldwide or in the States.
No, but in Canada, I think like Universal distributes them, they have plenty of distribution here, right? Gotcha. But outside of Canada, I don't know if they have any particular reach. So anyway, so the Flatliners, they're doing their thing on Rise, so they've left Fat, which is you know, gives me pause. But bands leave Fat, so that's,
but not on bad terms, on good terms.
Usually on good terms.
Well, we don't know that it's on bad terms, do we?
They said it wasn't. They did a post saying they're on good terms.
People are throwing money at these fat bands. You know, Mass Intruder left for, I can't remember, Pure Noise or somebody earlier this year. And these labels are trying to make a name for themselves. Now, Rise seems like they're past the point of making a name for themselves, but.
Yeah.
So TSOL is an interesting one, and I always got the impression, even though I know very little about Rise, that they release a handful of things, very much like Epitaph in a way. Like, they release a handful of things that really make them happy as music fans, and then they release a bunch of stuff that people are actually going to pay for.
Yeah, they'll do a Five Finger Death Punch that'll sell 500,000 copies, and they'll do a TSOL that'll sell a tenth of that. If that.
Did they actually sign Five Finger Death Punch?
I'm pretty sure. I was going to look it up. But
we keep reiterating this point. I don't know if it's actually.
Let's see if we can make it happen. If it hasn't,
yes, they did. They did. Okay.
Interwebs fast.
So anyway, so
but
so
yeah, they did. Like, they did what a 7 Seconds is like, record a couple years ago. That was amazing. I thought it was amazing. I mean, they've done some legacy type acts.
So TSOL. They're of like punk bands from that era are a band that I know more about reputationally than I could name songs from. Like, you know, we've all heard all the wacky stories, but I can't name you like more than
Code Blue
off the top of my head right now, like two or three TSOL songs. So I don't know quite how much this track that they released from the record, which is called
the Trigger Complex.
What's the song called?
I Wanted to See You or something like that.
Yeah. I don't know how typical that is of TSOL, or maybe of this, of today's TSOL, but I was kind of digging it. It's kind of chill, but I'm down. Yeah. It's got like a vibe that's working for me.
I'm a pretty big TSOL fan. I went to Detroit to see them this summer. And their live show, they definitely stick to their really early hardcore type stuff. But they're, you know, they were a band that was always changing. Their first record was definitely like a hardcore punk record, and then they started going in a little more gothic direction. And in recent years, they've definitely been sticking to more their punk roots. But I remember Jack saying, and you know, following him on Facebook or whatever, that that they were adding some keyboards, and that they were going in a little more of a that kind of gothy direction. And this reminded me a lot of their album Beneath the Shadows, which was their third album.
Well, also Dance With Me, for sure.
Yeah, but Dance With Me was edgier. This song, I didn't think was particularly edgy. I didn't think it was necessarily a horrible song, but I wasn't that thrilled about it as a TSOL song. I have some more opinions about it, but, you know, I will probably save them for my written review. So But I want to hear the whole album and kind of put that song in context too. But I was not, as a pretty big fan of the band, I was not that thrilled. So it's too damn long and repetitive, if nothing else.
Well, it's interesting you use the word damned, Tom. I would say the song is it's damning on what this damn song damn sounds like, let me tell you.
Yeah, because that is a good analogy, John, because definitely the later. Like, yeah, Dance With Me definitely had a damned kind of a gothy vibe to it.
Well, that's the thing, is TSOL saw the damned and they changed their sound.
Okay. I'm currently reading Jack Grisham's sort of semi-biography called American Demon. It's sort of interesting. But I like the band a lot, but I guess I don't know every nook and cranny of their...
I love those first 2 7-inches. I wish they did more stuff like that.
Yeah. I saw a band play the other night, and I swear half their riffs were from that, and I love the band. Half the riffs were from the self-titled and the Weathered Statue.
Was it TSOL?
No, it was just some local band. I just enjoyed it.
Come to think of it. So, John, we got a couple more stories here. These are both ones that you threw into the mix. I don't know anything about these bands, so you do it.
All right, you don't know anything about Iron Reagan. They've been around a while now.
Oh, I love her.
I know of them. Okay, but
yeah, Iron Reagan is sort of the alter ego of Municipal Waste. The criticism of Iron Reagan is that they sound exactly like Municipal Waste, which is
just a hair of DRI mixed in.
Yeah, well, exactly true. They're very close to each other, but Iron Reagan is a little darker, a little less funny, and more hardcore, more political. Yeah. So they've got a new record coming out. It sounds real good. It sounds like Iron Reagan. If you like Iron Reagan, you will like this record. They're great. Iron Reagan to me is a band that's better live than on record. I think they're good on record, but a little samey live. It's a lot more fun.
I have not had the chance to see them yet, John. They've only played town one time, and I did not make.
Dude, they tour more than
I don't know about that. They don't seem to get out past to the middle part of the country here.
I think they could do flyovers.
Now, Municipal Waste is playing in Detroit around Christmas time, but I'm not going to be able to go see that either. But I've not seen Municipal Waste. But I did get a killer deal on some Municipal Waste records on Black Friday.
What'd you get?
Mail order. Fatal Feast. A lot of the labels were doing some tremendously great online sales. I don't know if you noticed that. I ordered a bunch of stuff from... I ordered some metal stuff, and I ordered some punks. I'm looking forward to the boxes arriving at my house.
Well, I had to do that because I was too busy getting my ass kicked by bootleggers at the record convention. Yeah. let's wrap this all up with two quite fitting things. Funeral Cone. They're going to be putting out their first album. Adam White and Tom Trauma. Have you ever heard of Funeral Cone? There's no shame in not, because they only have 900 fans on Facebook.
I have never heard of them until I looked at the show notes for tonight, John.
Nope.
Funeral Cone.
The picture that we have with the story is scary, though.
Funeral Cone is actually really cool. People say I never shut up about Bad Canoes, which is true. I love Bad Canoes. The very first time I saw Bad Canoes, I also saw Funeral Cone, same show at the RIP, the now closed Golden Tea House in Philadelphia. Funeral Cone is a really interesting band. They're hardcore, but they're also kind of goth in that, like, they play really fast, really loud, really bombastically, but they kind of have like this haunted house keyboard. So they're weird, spooky, and hardcore. And
I'll tell you whether or not they're hardcore. Send me their cassette.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I would say they're a quintessential John Gentile band in that it's aggressive music, compact, but weird and unusual and hard to quantify. And next time Tom's on, we'll let you know if they are hardcore or not. So check them out. They've got a 7-inch out.
I only listen to 8-tracks, though. Anything I preview has to be an 8-track.
I wonder. You think there is a single hardcore punk 8-track?
Oh, sure.
You think so?
Like, I bet you could find like an exploited Troops of Tomorrow 8-track floating around in like some Coupe de Ville in the junkyard somewhere.
So you think exploited are hardcore?
Yes.
Interesting. So anyway, they've got a 7-inch and a live cassette, but you can get the digital files on Bandcamp. Check out their live cassette. It's awesome. I'm very excited for this. But let's wrap this up. Boys, a lot of legendary musicians died this year, but you know who else just died recently?
Castro.
Castro died.
Hey, all right.
Unlike a lot of famous musicians, people saw this coming because the dude was 90. And honestly,
didn't he have like 10 years ago, he had really serious health problems and handed the country over to his brother, Raul.
Yeah, Raul Castro is not as intimidating sounding as Fidel.
Yeah,
Castro.
Well, Raul's like 92. I think he's like old. Anyway,
I'm really expecting you to be like, well, little did you know, Fidel Castro released a split 7-inch with Madball
Manson, a spoken word 7-inch.
I think Fidel Castro did play baseball in Florida for a year.
I thought you were going to say bass. I'm like, sweet.
So anyways, not to get off on a political tangent, but I can't believe that some punk rockers are like, he was actually a good guy.
Tom Morello, would you shut up already?
I don't know how you say a guy that executed people without trial, a guy that threw people in jail, a guy that was
he gave them horrible universal health care, and that makes up for murdering his political opponents.
I don't know where people get off on this, and I think sometimes these super socialist people, not that some of the ideas are good, but they get so far. Fidel Castro was not a good guy. Anyways, the point being, Rancid has a song called Radio Havana, which I always assumed was about censorship in Cuba, but it's not at all. Have you ever read the lyrics to Radio Havana?
I don't even know the song. What album is it on?
Oh, it's on Rancid 5.
I like that. It's on the 2000. Yeah. The self-titled one they released.
I don't have that album.
Yeah. That's a good album.
That's the best Rancid album, Tom.
Well, I don't know, man. I just saw a story on the Hard Times today. They were saying rating every Rancid album as how it compares to An Out Come the Wolves.
Tom, I want you to listen to Rancid 5 and tell if it's hardcore or not. So anyways, I thought the song was about censorship in Cuba, but I don't think it's about anything, to tell you the truth. Adam, have you ever read the lyrics of this song?
Let's see. What is it? La Diablo's like...
I mean, do you think it's about censorship? I always assumed it.
57 Chevy with the radio on. It's a sad song that goes on and on. John, that song is about nothing.
That's not hardcore. That is not hardcore.
So anyways.
No, you know what? Most of that album, Tom Trauma, I think you would judge as hardcore.
I should check it out. I am not a huge Rancid fan. I probably have five or six of their albums. I don't have Rancid 2000. But a friend of mine just started a new band. He's like, dude, it sounds like Rancid 2000. I'm just nodding my head, smiling.
That's a great record, Tom. That's a great record.
All right, I'll check it out.
So anyway, Adam,
I got to write that on my little piece of paper here, too.
Adam, you are a fan of the song Radio Havana, though. It's a good song, right?
I was just telling you lyrics of the song, Tom.
So,
like what's that Ramon song? The great Ramon song from the first album. Havana, go-go. That's the name of that song.
Commando. Anyway. No, not Commando.
Ramones had that great song about Cuba. I can't believe I can't
P.T. Boat on the way to Havana. Used to make my living picking up banana.
Everyone listening to this right now is yelling
Havana Affair. It's Havana Affair.
Havana Affair.
There we go.
Thank So anyway, about 4 or 5 years ago, I was at Logos in Santa Cruz. It's a bookshop that sells some CDs. They had the CD single for Radio Havana for $3. I almost didn't buy it because I'm like, I already have this album. I don't need
to. Did you try to talk them down to $2, John?
I did. They would have took me out back and shot me. I did not, but I made the purchase, and it just goes to show, as Henry Rollins says, you never regret the records you bought, you always regret the records you didn't buy, and I bought this, and just for some reason, a couple of weeks ago, I was looking up Rancid records on Discogs. Did you guys know that...
It's worth $70,000.
Actually, who knows? No one knows what it's worth, because it's an extremely rare CD, and not only is it extremely rare, it's a rare alternate mix of Radio Havana that was only released on this CD promo given out to radio stations.
Who never played it.
And I'm going to play it for
you. Do I own this? I want to see if I own this. I owned a, there was a point in my life when I bought a lot of like Japanese rancid CD singles.
CD singles were the bomb. The skinny English style ones.
Yeah, man.
Those were awesome. You get two or three unreleased tracks or maybe a cover song. Yeah, I know. I see those once in a while. I buy them up.
What is it? Oh, no. Sorry. No, I own the Let Me. Was it the Let Me Go single? That's not the same thing. Okay.
So anyways, you listeners, I bet you so few people, you listeners might be one of 1,000 people on the entire planet that have heard this song, Radio Havana, the rare alternate mix from the Radio Havana CD single, just for you.
That's the Punk News Podcast. I want to stop recording so I can go listen to this Rancid song because that it is super aligned with my interests here. So if anyone wants to send us an email, podcast@punknews.org is how you do that. And any parting words, anyone?
I may have to, when it comes to questions of whether a band's hardcore or not, I may have to use a 10-point scale. Matt, rather than just saying whether something is hardcore or not.
Nope, it is a Boolean.
It's a yes or no.
Yes or no.
That's it. Live or die. I'm like the king with the thumbs up or the thumbs down. I put the thumbs down, your so-called hardcore band gets impaled by my gladiator. On that note,
I don't know what that is, but it sounds sexy.
On that note, thanks, Greg Simpson.